Hello, Rebels. I'm Sheila Gunn Reid, and you're listening to a free audio-only recording of my show, The Gunn Show. Tonight, my guest is independent Winnipeg journalist Marty Gold. If you like listening to the show, then you will love watching it. But in order to watch, you need to be a subscriber to premium content. That's what we call our long-form TV-style shows here on The Rebel. Subscribers get access to my show, as well as other great TV-style shows, too, like Ezra's Nightly, Ezra Levant Show, and David Menzies' fun Friday night show, Rebel Roundup. It's only $8 a month to subscribe. Or you can subscribe annually and get 2 months free. And just for our podcast listeners, you can save an extra 10% on a new premium membership by using the coupon code PODCAST when you subscribe. Just go to premium.rebelnews.com to become a member. And please leave a 5-star review on this podcast and subscribe in iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Those reviews are a great way to support The Rebel without ever having to spend a dime. And now please enjoy this free audio-only version of my show. A snowstorm hits Winnipeg in the midst of an Andrew Scheer campaign event, and CBC blames Andrew Scheer. And the NDP continue to have an alt-right anti-Semitism problem. I'm Sheila Gunn Reid, and you're watching The Gunn Show. Hey everybody, we're in the home stretch of this election campaign, thank God, which means, though, the crazy anti-conservative rhetoric from the CBC is going to be as ramped up and off the hook as ever. And NDP leader Jagmeet Singh says he's open to a coalition with the Liberals to keep those corrupt Liberals in power. Now, Jagmeet Singh himself has a bit of an anti-Israel problem that nobody outside of Jewish media is really talking about. In fact, many prominent people in the NDP have the exact same views on the right of the state of Israel to exist as your run-of-the-mill alt-right neo-Nazi kook. Joining me to talk about the storm that hit Manitoba and how CBC twisted themselves into some sort of pretzel to use bad weather to attack the conservative leader Andrew Scheer and all the anti-Israel madness coming from the NDP that the mainstream media just doesn't want to talk about is independent Winnipeg journalist Marty Gold in an interview we recorded yesterday afternoon. Joining me now from snowy Winnipeg, Manitoba, is my friend, good friend of the show, Marty Gold from thej.ca. Hey, Marty, lots happening in Manitoba politics. Manitoba, while it's frozen, has become a bit of a political hot potato for the Conservatives based on some of the coverage we're seeing in the ungodly CBC.
Oh, not just CBC. CTV, I think, hopped on the same bandwagon, and the Free Press ran a story that I think was a Canadian Press byline that, again, focused on the grievances of people who've been relocated on an emergency basis from the Interlake region of Manitoba. They've been hustled down to Winnipeg because of absolute power loss in numerous communities. There's a grouping of six communities in particular, including places like, I think it was Lake Manitoba Reserve and Little Saskatchewan that had been previously evacuated. Probably like five or six or seven years ago. So these people in these communities have already been through a lot. They are being shuffled around in Winnipeg, on a very ad hoc basis. And for some reason, the Scheer campaign showing up in a not spur of the moment, part of their itinerary, showing up at a hotel where some of them were lodged and being dislodged, being moved to more how should I put this, places where they are planned to stay for a longer period of time, at least initially, you know, like a week or whatever, till they move them out of shelters. And they start belly aching like Shere should, I don't know, pick up a sandbag or whatever. And it's just beyond ludicrous, the kind of criticism where, I mean, and I would say this in defense of Jagmeet Singh or any other campaign, even Justin Trudeau that showed up in a scheduled matter, and they're taking advantage of the national press. The state of emergency, this is not a catastrophe in the realm of natural disasters that are that we see across the world. There are certainly communities, numerous communities that are without power here and went down for days on end. But there was no humanitarian crisis. There was not people, you know, being swept away in floodwaters, people being buried in snowbanks or anything of the sort. But you hear the term, you know, state of emergency, and automatically politicians that are going about the usual business of elections are suddenly subject to criticism, surely for one reason, because of the color of their ballot, so to speak. It's just disgusting that the mainstream media, and I understand how these people are aggrieved, but you know, the shuffling from the Radisson Hotel where the Shere campaign appeared to wherever else they went next. And I've seen the individual in question was interviewed on CTV News their news channel or whatever. They're being shuffled around, not even by the Emergency Measures Organization of Manitoba, which had been my first supposition. They've been shuffled around by, in some cases, like the Interlake Tribal Council, by their own regional government is, I guess, working with the MO in Winnipeg. So everything's in a state of flux, but somehow it becomes Shere's fault for showing up. And for, you know, frankly, you're showing up in a province you're not from, the whole, you know, the campaign, the out-of-province media. And they don't have necessarily a grasp. You know, you walk in, the lobby's full of people, obviously, you know, or in a shambles, and the clothes on their back kind of thing. I don't really know what the expectation was, but it seems apparent to me that when headlines seize upon, and I'll tell you who the worst is, to name names, Katie Simpson. Katie Simpson, I sent you this tweet. Yeah. She recirculates this garbage. And she, you know, I think I said in one or two appearances ago here on the Gun Show, I have friends that work at CBC. I myself have done paid work with them. My first paid media gig was with CBC in the entertainment department. But it's getting harder and harder to argue against complete defunding mm-hmm. when so-called journalists like Katie Simpson go in and make this the highlight. I am hard-pressed to find any stories that discuss what was Andrew Shere's message to Manitobans. What policy did he enunciate for the national platform? Did he speak? And this is something I want to see Shere talk about, Singh talk about, Trudeau talk about, Bernier talk about. Manitoba collects an exorbitant amount of transfer payments. I did not look into this, even look at this, actually, till the weekend when I stumbled across it. Nobody's discussing how to turn Manitoba from a have-not province into a have-province. Every candidate for parliament in Manitoba should be talking about this. How do we turn the corner? I'm hoping that when the hydro disaster is done, and I've got, you know, various information, you know, I can share with the audience about how bad it is. But when this is done, the emergency assistance, which Manitoba rightfully can claim, and then the city of Winnipeg with its state of emergency can also claim back from the province of Manitoba repair to, in particular, in the city, the number of trees, and I sent you photos that you're free to use, the number of trees that, like, every street, literally, a four-block radius near my office in St. Boniface, every street at either one end or the other, about like one-block stretch from, you know, two east-west streets bounding it, every one, two, three, four streets in a row blocked by fallen trees, roadways impassable. Nobody that I've grown up with here, worked with over the years, we've never seen anything approaching this. The damage was a lot less in the east side of the city. A lot of parks, Coronation Park in St. Boniface is devastated. Kildonan Park has some damage, but you know, not nearly the same. So this this storm affected different parts of the city in different ways. When we're done collecting our disaster assistance, trying to get the hydro system up and running, getting people relocated to their homes, their home communities, there has to be, you know, it should probably be a national discussion.
Yeah.
How does Manitoba, Premier Palliser, or the opposition parties, Winnipeg is the economy that drives this province. How do we get pulled up by our bootstraps so we stop draining the Canadian economy and being a province that relies, is forced to rely on equalization payments? I'm hoping that this conversation will be spurred. I personally would have liked to see Mr. Sheeran, his appearance in Winnipeg, talk about something like that. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. Who knows? The mainstream media is too busy talking with people that are blaming Andrew Scheer, who cannot order a hydro wire reconnected, who cannot order a works crew out, who cannot order snow cleared, who is in no, cannot cut a check. You know, I understand these people are complaining they haven't gotten any disbursements, any per diems. I understand that that's concerning. But to go on a crap on Andrew Scheer, any other politician, including Brian Pallister, for that matter, for these shortcomings in their initial treatment of the first few days of this kind of unprecedented weather event is just unfathomable. And the mainstream media, instead of spending a molecule of brain power, a millisecond on thinking through, did any of these reporters push back on Madame Missy Abbott or any of the other people that were complaining and say, well, what do you think Scheer should really be able to do about it? Have you complained about the prime minister? Where, you know, arguably maybe there is something the federal government can do. I don't think there was any pushback at all because they heard exactly what they wanted to hear. Scheer's standing in the most recent polls, where consistently the Liberals have fallen to 30% and below, putting Scheer in position of having the most, potentially the most seats. And they heard exactly what some of these clowns, some of these partisans, and by the way, all good to be partisan, just declare it.
Yep, exactly.
And the partisanship by CBC, that they took advantage of this, is just ridiculous. The other thing is, a lot of these reporters that I saw, as I think I noted to you privately in notes, they're filing from like Ottawa and Toronto. They aren't even here on the ground.
Yeah.
They don't even know what's going on. Very unfair all the way around. And I'm sure that they were just sharpening their pencils, so to speak, for the last week of the campaign. Because obviously there's a great divide, certainly in the West, between how people view federal politics and how the Eastern-based mainstream media wants them to think and wants them to see things.
You know, that reminds me of an article I sent you privately. It looks as though a lot of the displaced people in Manitoba are First Nations or Indigenous people. And I think part of
I think that is exclusively what's being talked about. I haven't heard of a non-Indigenous community that was evacuated.
Right. And there's an Environics poll that was commissioned by APTN that shows that the Liberal support from Aboriginal people, it's just plummeted. It's down to half of what it was in 2015. And actually, the majority of identified, like decided First Nations voters are going conservative. And I think it's very important, and I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but I'm more of a conspiracy factualist. It looks as though the mainstream media is trying to whip up this division that Andrew Scheer doesn't care about these displaced Aboriginal folks because they need to do something to change the narrative that, you know, that First Nations and Indigenous people are really seeing the Liberals for what they really are and that they've done very little in the way of getting their promises done for our First Nations communities, everything that they campaigned on back in 2015.
You know, in Manitoba, and I'm not positive in Saskatchewan, you know, there's a very strong, among Métis communities, there's a very strong conservative thread. When I say conservative, I don't necessarily mean party-oriented as much as values and lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, values of self-sufficiency and family values and things like that. And I think this relates back to Eastern media who cannot grasp that Aboriginal and First Nations communities, that they can identify when they've been betrayed, when they've been let down by a sitting government, and they mark their ballots accordingly. I don't think what you've expressed is a conspiracy theory whatsoever. Increasingly, we see, how much material have you seen during the course of the election that is focused on the threat of far right xenophobia and racism and such things, and nothing about the threats to various ethnic groups, to community harmony, etc., coming from the far left. Nothing. So there is definitely a theme coming from these mainstream newsrooms. As I said, this is going to fall on deaf ears in the West. I don't think that this L'Affaire Scheer booking into the Radisson Hotel concurrent to its emergency use as a temporary lodging for displaced persons from communities 2, 3, 4, 5 hours or more away from Winnipeg. I don't think it's going to swing any ridings in Manitoba, and I don't think it's going to swing very many votes. I think that there's going to be a reckoning after this election with media, whether it's with publishers, whether it's with managing editors, the people that run newsrooms. They're going to have to take a careful look at how they cover things when the West, including British Columbia, ends up with, 12 Liberal seats and maybe 10 or 12 NDP seats and 2 Green seats, and the rest of it, 70 or more, whatever the actual number is, probably closer to 80 or 85, are going to be conservative seats. They're going to really look at how well they are reflecting their own communities and the values of those communities. Now, whether they do it or not, it might be at their peril, but I think that there will be, at least in Western Canada, a bit of a shift in the relationship between the media and the news consumers. Now, that may be good news for people like yourself, people like myself that are independent and a lot closer to centrist positions. A lot of the stuff that you and I espouse are viewed as being right wing, but they are in fact really centrist, moderate positions in terms of the Canadian traditions. This might be good news for people like ourselves that are free to take swings in both directions, whether it's at the political right or the political left. I know that, this campaign in Manitoba has been singularly unremarkable. There's been no real bellwether moment from any of the candidates, really, so to speak. The candidates are really heads down kind of here. No candidate for a parliament in Manitoba has really tried to seize a headline with any particular pronouncement or stunt. And one thing that's happening here, I'll mention parenthetically, is there is definitely absolutely voter fatigue coming through the Manitoba campaign and now this one. And the storm, which was, as I say, unprecedented. My brother, who has not lived here he moved away 35 years ago, and he messaged me the other night in between Jewish religious holidays, with one word with a question mark, snow. And we had one ice storm, one snow event here in 1985, where it was only 10 centimeters of snow, but the wind and the temperature created sheets of ice that the next day people had to chisel into their cars. This is in the 80s, so you had to use a key entry to get in the driver's side. You couldn't chisel through the ice to get in your doors, and the city commissioners were out writing tickets for people who couldn't move their cars.
Government.
And so a lot of us remember that. That is the only time there's been anything even remotely that disrupted everyday life in Winnipeg because of snow. And so that is especially, listen, I was exhausted Saturday because I was outside shoveling just to be able to make sure I wasn't overwhelmed on Saturday and Sunday here. I was exhausted, and people that have been campaigning for all the parties, knocking on the doors, they're beat. And the end of the campaign will come as a welcome relief, not just to people like yourself and myself in certain respects, But just the people of Manitoba, people especially Winnipeg, are just going to be very, very glad to have that behind them, I think.
Yeah, I can relate. Alberta's been in this state of constant campaign mode for the last 2 years. It was first for Jason Kenney to win the PC leadership. Then it was unity between the two parties. And then it was, you know, campaigning to defeat the NDP. And now it's campaigning in the federal election. And it just seems like one of those exhausting American election cycles that takes 2 years. That's what we've been in Alberta. You sent me some interesting, the Manitoba seats forecast. It looks like the Liberals are likely to drop 4 seats, some to Conservatives, obviously, and it looks like they're losing 1 to the NDP.
Yeah, we can go through that very quickly. I have looked at some other, since the prognostication, not my own, this was, is it... Canada 338 is the website. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah.
I've looked at a couple of other, I stumbled across a couple of other pollsters. There's a couple of real outliers there. They rely more so on predicting national results. And there's one that thinks the Liberals are like at 156 seats or something like absurd number. I'm satisfied that this chart is accurate. And I asked around a little bit last evening in preparation for this. Seats that are up in the air, up for grabs, so to speak. The ultra hyphenated Charleswood, St. James, Assiniboia, Headingley, the far west part of Winnipeg. Headingley is actually a separate municipality. Dr. Doug Aelfson of the Liberals won an upset last time around, aided by the fact that the NDP candidate had been forced out, so that moved some left of center votes towards him. Defeat of Stephen Fletcher. Fletcher running in for the People's Party. There was a poll out there that showed he was influencing the election. The prognostication we saw is that the Conservatives, Marty Morantz, former city councillor, he was a one-term city councillor. And Marty has been, who I know personally and have for about 10 years, Marty's comes across a very humble guy, he evokes the personality of somebody who's an old style public servant. Like, he's not running for politics for a job. He go to work in the family business. He's a lawyer, etc. But Marty's been door knocking a lot. He's very lucky. He bailed out on City Hall in the 2014 election. So he's not tainted by anything that's gone wrong under Brian Bowman. Marty is he's made a good impression of the doors, but Fletcher does too. I misspoke myself. Actually, Marty, I think, bailed out in the 2018 election. Fletcher makes a great impression of the doors. I've heard this from a couple of people because they're so used to Stephen Fletcher. They're used to seeing him, and they don't, his voters don't have the kinds of concerns that are enunciated about the People's Party, about Bernier's other candidates, etc. Aelfson grates on people a little bit. He's got a bit of a reputation, as do, you know, he's a surgeon, and sometimes they've got, you know, a bit of an ego. And there's also a view that he didn't deliver for the riding. So the question is whether Morantz is going to be dragged down by anything that goes sideways because of the Fletcher influence, so to speak. Another riding that where the Liberals are in some trouble is Kildonan and St. Paul, where I think it started going in reverse for Marian Mihaichuk once she was removed from cabinet. Again, I've known her personally for a number of years, and she's facing a candidate who's a real rising star in the Manitoba Conservatives, Raquel Danchaud, who's... you know, again, the ground campaign and Dancho has a lot of good provincial connections from a past candidacy. It's been known that Mihaichuk was going to be in trouble in that riding for a while. I don't know that she's, you know, the ground game, I think, is not what she needed to be able to recover. In Winnipeg Center, Robert Falcon Ouellette is in very tough against the star candidate for the NDP, Leah Gazan. She is You know, I've never seen her identified as a Marxist, but the endorsement she got this weekend from Naomi Klein tells me she is. Kazan is of the in terms of Manitoba politics, she's in the Nahanni Fontaine wing of the NDP. Very big on the anti-capitalism, colonialism bandwagon, anti-bandwagon, so to speak. And they've thrown a lot of resources, not in, for instance, where the aforementioned Madame Fontaine, the deputy leader of the Manitoba Provincial NDP, they haven't thrown their resources into Winnipeg North to try to knock off Kevin Lamoureux, who originally in 2004, whatever it was, only won the seat by like under 50 votes. They've given up on trying to knock off Kevin Lamoureux in Winnipeg North, and they've thrown a lot of NDP resources into that riding. Similarly, you know, the NDP in Kildonan and St. Paul, which is, again, a north side riding, Evan Crosney's run a very strong campaign for the NDP, and that's also hurt Mihaljczyk. So they've focused resources there. But Kazan is, you know, like I said, she's a rising star. And has the U of W University of Winnipeg crowd behind her as well. And Ouellette just had a lot of bad press right from when he started.
Yeah.
As a member of parliament, I think there was the aborted run for speaker and other things. Again, I've mentioned on this program, I have very good personal relationships with a number of these members of parliament, liberal members of parliament we're speaking of. But you know, Ouellette benefited that when he ran in 2015, he was the fresh face and Pat Martin was the tired face that had outworn his NDP welcome. And now Ouellette is carrying the burden of, you know, and he's done some great work in the constituency, but not as much at the door knocking level, I think, as people were hoping to see the voters themselves. And number two, I think that the Trudeau thing weighs around him like an anchor.
Yeah.
In a riding with a lot of, as you mentioned, riding with a lot of Aboriginal support, if it swings back to the NDP, it's no big surprise. In Winnipeg South, right now, Terry Duguid is seen as being behind Melanie Mayhar. She has a lot of experience in the provincial, I was going to say bureaucracy. I think she was a more a civil servant than a paper pusher. But she's got a good grounding, very experienced in provincial conservative politics. And Duguid, you know, was considered kind of lucky to win the last time. He's a perpetual bridesmaid in Manitoba politics. The sense was that he was in a toss-up. The prediction that we saw, the indication is that he's behind. Winnipeg South Centre, speaking of toss-ups, Jim Carr in a toss-up against Joyce Bateman. I don't know that there's a less popular conservative candidate in Manitoba than Bateman. A lot of people were not very happy that she had the nomination. She's, you know, her career is most notable here, aside from the federal stuff, as a Winnipeg school board. I think she was the chair of the Winnipeg school board at one point. And for Jim Carr to be in a position to be in a tie with Joyce Bateman is who does not have, you know, not every conservative is behind her.
Yeah,
I think is a good way of putting it. People were hoping for a more vibrant, a younger candidate. If he is losing to her, A, Bateman would have a good ground game, yes. But B, boy, that tells you that Jim Carr is, as the senior regional minister, similar, I guess, to what's happening with Ralph Goodale, right, in Saskatchewan, that he's wearing that Trudeau anchor. One other that's a toss-up, St. Boniface, St. Patel, Dan Vandell, who had a good early start to the campaign, and Regine Caron, in the last 3 weeks, she's a police officer who's very conservative. Her messaging is very law and order.
Great.
And she has, in the last 3 weeks, the signs for her, not that I count signs per se, but it's been obvious that there's been a swing towards her in different parts of the riding. It's pretty expansive. And Vandell is in tough. I know that his campaign was very optimistic. About 10 days ago, they felt that they were in good shape. All their signs were getting out. They had a lot of ground support. That is definitely in toss-up territory. So when we go through the list, one other. The NDP, Daniel Blakey, a member of the Blakey political dynasty, took the Elmwood Transcona riding in the last election by a very small margin. Lawrence Toad on the comeback trail. A lot of time to prepare. And the Toad campaign has been quietly confident. The polling is showing that Blakey is behind this. I think is a surprise to some people, maybe an indication Blakey was relying too much on the family dynasty, the Bill Blakey tradition. And Toad has his detractors. He's very socially conservative. But he's had a very good, you know, like those are the kinds of campaigns, Toad, for instance, where you'd expect there'd be some bomb thrown at him of something that he might have said that would irk people who don't like social conservatism. In all these writings that I mentioned, there's been, you know, none of that tactically has gone on. These writings that we've talked about just now are all Winnipeg writings. Outside of Winnipeg, I don't recall seeing that any of them looked like there. And I'm just scanning the list now. These are places like Portage, Lisgar. None of these look like they're moving. And the Nikki Ashton holds the Churchill seat, and she seems to be ahead of a liberal member of the legislature. Judy Clausen had quit to run for the federal party, and I think she's learning that the provincial popularity she had is not translated very well onto the federal stage. So Ashton could hold on and end up being the lone NDP member of the national NDP caucus in Ottawa after October 21st.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And that's the rundown.
It's interesting to see these regional cabinet ministers for Trudeau in some very serious trouble. For example, Amarjeet Sohi in Edmonton, he's going to lose that riding by 15 points to Tim Apple, and he barely won by less than 100 votes last time. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to see, like you say, Trudeau hanging like a millstone around their necks. Boy, I'd love to see.
You know, I don't remember.
I'd love to see Goodale gone. I would love to see
that. I don't remember the exact details. I don't remember the exact details, but it strikes me that the 1972 election, for those of us that are very old and follow politics in our childhood, that that was the election where Trudeau Sr. won 109 to 108. Mm-hmm. Over Bob Stanfield. And if I'm remembering correctly, a number of Trudeau cabinet members felt the wrath of the voters in 72. And so that family tradition for Justin Trudeau seemingly has the potential to continue. It would, if Jim Carr were to fall and Ralph Goodale, even if the Trudeau Liberals were to pull out a victory in the seat count, it'd be very, very hard for anybody to take seriously that there was any legitimacy to a federal Liberal government when their most senior cabinet ministers in the West go down a defeat. It would clearly indicate an increasing gap, an increasing divide between the Eastern establishment that runs that party and the sensibilities, and I say sensibilities, not sensitivities, of Liberal and mid-range voters across the prairies and in Alberta.
Yeah, it's.
But look, Ralph Goodale's needed his ass kicked for a long time. So if that happens, good for him.
Yeah. There's a guy that deserves retirement. I think it's going to be interesting to see the cultural divide between the big, huge blue middle of Canada, middle and west of Canada, versus what it looks like on the other sides of Canada. It's going to be very similar to the electoral map of the United States, I predict, where it was, all blue around the coast and the middle is red flyover country. But at least in the United States, flyover country won the day. Now, you mentioned Nikki Ashton hanging on to her seat, and that's a great segue into the next topic that I want to talk about. Because we've talked secular politics, let's talk Jewish politics. That's your other life, and Jewish news. Nikki Yes. Ashton has been a really staunch proponent of BDS, boycott, divestment, and sanctions. She's called the founding of the State of Israel, the Nakba, the catastrophe. And it looks to me like the NDP have a real anti-Semitism problem in their party. They've come out as pro BDS, And you guys at the J.ca, you even have some pretty breaking news with regard to that. So why don't you give us a bit of the rundown?
Well, sure. There's an organization called the Canada-Palestine Association. This is, again, one of these Marxist-oriented, far, far left liberation theology organizations. And they sent out questionnaires to all the political parties. I will preface this by saying I have not searched for the response they got from the other political leaders. So I can't compare the NDP response to the other replies that they got. But they sent out a questionnaire with 9 or 10 questions on it. I truncated what I sent to you. We don't know who prepared the responses for the federal NDP or who signed off on it. But the questions that were sent included, do you recognize the right of Canadians to support BDS movement? Answer, yes. Do you oppose condemning or criminalizing people or organizations to support the BDS movement? Yes. Do you oppose the anti-Palestinian? And all these questions were loaded in this kind of a manner. Do you oppose the anti-Palestinian, anti-democratic and politically charged IHRA definition of anti-Semitism? The NDP tries to have it both ways, that they say we believe the government of Canada must have a clear definition of anti-Semitism so we can better gauge, report, and work towards ending it. We have some concerns that the IRHA definition and its associated examples could undermine those who wish to speak out in favor of the human rights of Palestinians. So you now have a federal NDP, and whether Jagmeet Singh saw this and initialed it or not, I don't know, that it has now come out in support of BDS, in spite of the BDS movement being entirely, again, if it focused solely on products in so-called disputed territories, that were clearly disputed territories, would be one thing. This includes academic boycotts of Israeli science and innovation. It's vile beyond belief. It clearly has its roots in boycotts that were perpetrated in Arab states against Jewish businesses in Nazi Germany. And here's the NDP in the middle of a federal election campaign where they're saying, no, BDS is legitimate. And, you know, definitions of anti-Semitism that lump in BDS support and the BDS philosophy as being anti-Semitic. Oh, geez, we've got some concerns. Listen, just say it. Jews should not vote for the NDP, let me rephrase that. Jews that support the existence of the State of Israel should not vote for the NDP. They, you know, frankly, they probably could care less if Jews voted for the NDP anyways. Jagmeet Singh, I indicated the last time I was on with you, whereas Trudeau had a blackface problem, Jagmeet Singh has a kind of a color blindness or some sort of a blindness towards anti-Semitism. Ron East, our publisher, had sent a correspondence to Mr. Singh at the invitation of the NDP when he raised some concerns about a particular character who cloaks himself in the guise of a human rights activist in Toronto, and the fact that this guy had a picture taken with Singh and was waving it around as a form of legitimizing himself, Husseini al-Najim. Ron had sent Jagmeet Singh an email indicating that there had been a problem with this fellow in August and September, casing out Jewish synagogues, harassing a lapsed Muslim woman who was very pro-Israel in a supermarket. Ron asked Singh to denounce al-Najim and the anti-Semitism he espouses, and to ensure anti-Semitism doesn't have a home in the NDP party. Ron did not get a response from Jagmeet Singh, and we've now seen the NDP have moved the goalposts so that BDS is and anti-Semites who are at the foundation, at the core of the BDS movement in Canada, the likes of Nikki Ashton, for instance, they're completely at home in the NDP. So that's really, that's really comforting to Jewish voters from coast to coast. There's, I think, just under 400,000 people who identify as Jewish in this country. Now, this character that Singh will not address, he on Facebook proclaimed that he was campaigning actively with the NDP in Toronto. And made a number of lovely candidates, lovely comments rather. New York is a Zionist base. Allah brought me here for a sacred reason. The Zionists are controlling a lot of areas in the, around Toronto. I'm working with the NDP right now, he posted on Facebook. So I'm giving those signs and flyers and stuff like that. And then he mentioned that when he knocked on a door and sees somebody who's a Zionist, that they tell you to go away. No, you're just going to welcome a character like this into your home. Well, this created enough heat that the NDP candidate in North York disavowed him and put out a statement on October 13th that they've diligently checked their campaign records and determined that there's no connection with the NDP campaign in York Center or the riding association, that he wasn't part of the candidates. This is Andrea Velasquez Jimenez, who's a noted BDS leader in Toronto and has said some lovely things about Israel and the Jewish people in her past. And they're claiming her campaign put out a statement that she has no association, no affiliation with this guy. So look at this weird situation where here's an NDP candidate that can't run away fast enough from Al-Najim, but Jagmeet Singh was silent on the matter. Very strange. Just very strange that Singh can't bring himself to do something one of his own candidates felt compelled to do. Now, granted, it's in pursuit of not losing whatever Jewish votes she might be able to scrounge up in York Center, but it is still kind of striking that the candidate distances herself, but the leader won't. What we do have that you alluded to is some exclusive news that came to us over the course of the long weekend. Someone associated, who's identified as being associated with Firas al-Najim, and this person is more of he espouses a lot of neo-Nazi kind of tendencies, which is a weird alignment, I know, with the, you know, kind of Marxist, Islamist radical faction, but you know, when there's Jews to be picked on, exactly, they will find common cause.
The
vile characters will always are beginning, as we've seen, you know, in Europe, to coalesce around their intergenerational hatred of the Jewish people, mm-hmm, and of the Jewish culture and Jewish values. The RCMP has been investigating a character who is connected, has been connected online in the past to Firas, and they have referred the file over to a federal prosecutor. This is in Alberta. Now, the RCMP told the J.ca that the prosecutor, or the investigator rather, was concerned that some of the comments, for instance, that have been accumulated and then forwarded on as examples of hate speech or threats of violence, that they were made, you know, some time ago, over a year ago. And there was a concern by the RCMP investigator that, mm-hmm, a charge might not hold because nothing has happened in the last year. As, you know, as though that's a real valid measuring stick. So this is now in the hands of in essence, a Trudeau government prosecutor. During the election campaign, I don't know that we'd expect any kind of decision about a prosecution for hate speech or making threats based on national origin, etc. I don't know that we'd expect that to come out, but it's been made clear that if the decision is made that this isn't prosecutable, something happens either by this person or with their encouragement in the future, that this would cause a great uproar that would not go away very quickly. Here's a situation where people have taken note of very vile, very violent comments and threats, have forwarded them on to the RCMP, but now suddenly they view things. This isn't where somebody said something 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 60 years ago, when they were flirting with the remnants of the Nazi party in Argentina or something, or, you know, in Bolivia. These are comments made in Canada, in Alberta, in the last year, and the RCMP is hesitant to pull the trigger on laying a charge, not because they doubt the validity of what's been reported to them, but because of the notion that somehow some legal principle would be applied. So the comment made was a good defense lawyer would blah blah blah, And my retort to, and I Ron East, you know, shares his point of view with me at the J.ca. Maybe a good defense lawyer would be able to try to poke holes in a prosecution based on these comments and that it's in the last year he didn't do anything, did he? Didn't like punch out a Jew or set fire to a synagogue or something. But a good prosecutor would rip that argument to shreds. Maybe the problem here is that the RCMP in reality doesn't have faith in the prosecutors, the federal prosecution branch, not to drop the ball. Maybe that was the hidden message, but I don't know. We have faith in the RCMP.
Yep.
We've had good discussions with them, with Winnipeg police, other law enforcement with regards to the research and information that comes to our attention about anti-Semites, about Islamist radicals, etc. We are going to be watching eagerly to see what happens with this file and whether charges are brought forward against this individual who, believe me, when you hear these people talk about who does or doesn't have a place, Prime Minister Trudeau is always very quick to tell somebody who's a critic, your views don't have a place in Canadian society. This is an example of the kinds of individuals who definitely don't have a place in society in the traditional view of what our values are. But in some cases, they've been, people that associate with them, people that hold the same viewpoints, that espouse the same kind of violent rhetoric, they have a place seemingly within the federal NDP. Not a very comforting thought.
Yeah, when the far left and the far right hold hands, it's always because of the Jews. Every single time. Marty, I know you probably have snow to shovel, and we're recording this Tuesday. I have to get across the province to a book signing.
Actually, it melted.
Oh, great. Good. So you probably have a flooded basement. How can people find your work, both in your secular journalism and with the J.ca? And how, more importantly, how can they help support your work to keep you going?
I've gotten some wonderful feedback, especially on Twitter, from your viewers about my previous appearances. My secular work, secular reporting, is found at the acronym for the Great Canadian Talk Show, tgcts.com. That's where I post stories. I think the most recent story when this airs, I think, is probably going to be about city politics in Winnipeg and the fact that the city charter needs to be revised because the strong mayor model, we have a mayor who's Mayor Brian Bowman, who's very envious of Mayor Nenshi, is one of his role models, and Don Iveson. The way City Hall is working right now is turned into undeclared party politics. So I'm looking at putting up a story about that. I also have a link to my previous appearance with you here on The Gun Show, which got my report from the Trudeau apology tour day one. They got a lot of really great, kind words and good response to my reporting. The J.ca is where we cover matters of importance to the Jewish community, both in Winnipeg and Western Canada, as well as nationally, and stories about various stories about Israel and the scourge of anti-Semitism worldwide. In my Twitter profile, as well as on the J.ca and on the Great Canadian Talk Show website, there's links to PayPal, and anybody can email me, contact me if they're interested in helping to perpetuate the kind of work that I've been doing here on the Canadian Prairie for many, many years, providing not just a Jewish perspective, but there is nobody doing the kind of work that I am doing here in terms of freelance reporting, independent reporting, without the influence of corporate media. I don't depend on any government dollars whatsoever. So I'm not going to be influenced about what to report. If somebody needs to get a good smack, they're going to get it. Whether it's Premier Pallister on the one side or Wab Kanu, the NDP leader, on the other side. I try to report on stories that nobody else covers. Sometimes because I get good tips, and sometimes, the information's out there and the media doesn't recognize that stories about the little guy, stories about people being oppressed by bureaucracy, stories about people who want to make a difference and are told they can't, the mainstream media, you know, if it doesn't involve a ribbon cutting, if it doesn't involve one of their favored, presently aggrieved groups, you know, they dismiss covering those kinds of stories. And I just try to bring out stuff that is new information. I mean, sometimes it's not new information. It's stuff I've covered before that I keep following up on. Like, nobody else ever criticizes the bike lobby here, for instance. Yeah. They deny that that one even exists. So, you know, things like that, where there's pushback to the global, and there is a globalist agenda. I love reading now how there is none. There is. It's trying to influence the Western, you know, Western way of life and Western values. And I push back against that because, you know, as you and I have discussed previously, a lot of people think things should be different, but they wouldn't dare actually go live someplace where it's like that now.
Amen. Marty, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. You're always so generous with your time. You break down the complex issues in a way that we can all understand. And I look forward to the next time that you're back on the show.
I look forward to the next invitation. And thank you to all the viewers for being so supportive of the work that we do.
Great. Thanks, Marty.
Friends, would you agree with me that this has been the most divisive, disgusting election we've ever seen in our lives? And we've all lived through the NDP's failed campaign of fear and smear against conservative voters here in Alberta. I cannot wait for this election campaign to be over. And I hope my friend Marty is right, that this election will force a reckoning for the media and for the role they played in demonizing normal Canadians who hold deeply mainstream views on issues of climate change, pipelines, and even immigration. Because it has been one thing for the Liberals to try to score political points by demonizing normal people, but it's an entirely other thing for the media to carry that narrative further for the Liberals. Well, everyone, that's the show for tonight. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll see everybody back here in the same time, in the same place next week, where hopefully we will have some sort of new government to talk about. And remember, don't let this government tell you that you've had too much to think.